over spacious skies for amber waves of grace. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Joan Mellon, who's a professor of English, and she's written a lot of books. But her latest book is A Farewell to Justice. And Joan has gone into the background of the story of Jim Garrison, a fascinating insight based upon a thousand interviews. And how many reports did you go through, Joan?
I don't know how many thousands of pages of documents from the National Archives, but 7 years in the making, and here it is.
Well, now, of course, they did apparently release a lot of papers, 25 years or so after the assassination. What was it, the early 1990s? They admitted they released some of the papers from the Warren Commission?
That's right, Stan. Beginning in 1992, Congress passed the JFK Act, and under that act, any records that the FBI and CIA and some other agencies had were really required to be deposited in the National Archives for historians and scholars to look at. I'm positive that not everything is there, but there are traces of the truth in the midst of the hundreds of thousands of pieces of paper that we have in College Park, Maryland.
Well, now, isn't it pretty obvious, then, that the CIA and the FBI were involved in the cover-up, and they did everything they could to delete as much information so the American people could not learn the truth?
Well, this is absolutely true, and I'll give one example. Hale Boggs was a Louisiana representative at Congress, and he was a member of the Warren Commission, and the curator of special collections at Tulane University in New Orleans told me they had the Hale Boggs papers, and one day two FBI agents walked in and said they had the permission of Mrs. Boggs, Lindy Boggs, and they proceeded to go over the Hale Boggs papers and remove all references, all papers that had anything to do with the Kennedy assassination. Now, when I heard this, I filed a Freedom of Information suit appeal to get these documents, and of course the FBI said they never heard of them.
And of course the thing is, everything is a cover-up, and if they were able to cover up the murder of an American president, what are they covering up today? And of course, I think the most amazing thing is both the CIA, which is not supposed to operate in the United States, but obviously does, and the FBI worked in concert to deceive the American people. And of course, your book really goes into the background of Jim Garrison and his effort to try to get to the bottom of what really happened.
Well, Sam, one of the things I discovered almost at once is that the FBI and CIA have been cooperating since the original founding of the CIA in 1947, and those documents are available in the National Archives, and you can see the mutual cooperation. You can also see many documents which reveal the CIA operating domestically with the FBI and without the FBI. So the documents do reveal that. There are so many documents that they just couldn't destroy everything, cover everything, and a lot of these documents passed review because the agencies did review them before they submitted them to the National Archives, and we do have clear evidence of, for example, as you say, the CIA operating domestically. There's absolutely no question about it.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and our guest this afternoon is Joan Mellon. Her book, A Farewell to Justice, it's a very, very extensively documented book about the investigation of the murder of an American president by a crusading district attorney in New Orleans named Jim Garrison, and what happened to him when he tried to expose the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty,
Our guest this afternoon, Joan Mellon, and she's a professor of English. She has written a number of books, but she spent 7 years compiling an amazing book called A Farewell to Justice. And it is the story, not so much of the murder of President Kennedy, but of Jim Garrison, the district attorney in New Orleans, who tried to get to the truth, because, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald had spent a good deal of time there, and, of course, it was Jim Garrison's contention that the assassination was partly planned there. It is his contention, of course, that there were other people involved besides Lee Harvey Oswald. In fact, somebody had actually called one of the attorneys in New Orleans to ask him to come to represent Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, I'm going to let Joan tell you this story, because there's so many intricacies to this, and so many rabbit trails, so many efforts to put out so much information to conceal the truth in the American people, because think of the implications. If they could kill an American president, you know, and get away with it, and confuse them with the Warren Commission and all sorts of planted articles in the media, and then the murder of so many people, and certainly we used to carry a book called The Missing Witnesses, over 100 people who knew something about the assassination had died under mysterious circumstances. You pick up the story there, Joan.
Well, I think I'd like to just underline what you said, Stan. If they could murder the President of the United States and then cover it up, what else could they do? And I have to say that I did an op-ed piece called, which is on my website, joanmellon.net, and it's called 9/11 and 11/22. The 11/22 being, for those who are young, the date of the murder of President Kennedy. So, there are similarities between the 9/11 Commission and its covering up of the truth, and the Warren Commission's absolute refusal to investigate even a very important lead. But I'd like to tell the story that you're talking about, and that is that the day after the assassination of President Kennedy, a man named Clay Bertrand called a lawyer in New Orleans, whose name was Dean Andrews, and asked him to go to Dallas to represent Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, Dean Andrews happened to be in the hospital with pneumonia and hesitated, and the next morning he called his own lawyer, another lawyer in New Orleans called Monk Zeldin, and asked him to go because Andrews was too sick to go. And as he was talking to Monk Zeldin the next day, Monk Zeldin says, "Well, you don't have to worry about it. Your client's just been shot." And of course, that was the moment when Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And as Jim Garrison said, he had great sardonic sense of humor. Garrison said, "If Oswald had been allowed to live, he'd still be talking. He couldn't be permitted to live because he obviously was framed."
Hold that thought, right? We'll be there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Joan Mellon, and we're talking about a book, A Farewell to Justice, and of course, she's going to the background. There was an attorney actually in New Orleans who had actually been called by a man named Clay Bertrand. Now, of course, he's also known as Clay Shaw, but Clay Bertrand had called this attorney in New Orleans and asked him if he would go to Dallas to defend Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, he was in the hospital. The kid couldn't go at that time. So the following day, he called another lawyer to see if he would go, at least get the case started. And, of course, he was notified that he didn't have to worry about representing Lee Harvey Oswald because at that point he had been murdered. And as you pointed out in your book, here's the man who's assassinated the President of the United States. He's questioned for hours, and there's no record of what was said. No recording of what was said, no transcript of what was said. That is amazing. You would think that they would have tried to keep some records about what this man who just supposedly killed the president had said.
Well, with the Warren Commission was no investigation at all. What was required was a homicide investigation. And in the late 1970s, there was another investigation that was sponsored by Congress, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and they hired a homicide detective in New Orleans called L.J. Delsa. And LJ went to Dallas and talked to the police and said, "You mean you didn't even write his name on a matchbook? I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald's name, that is. How were you going to find out who he was?" Because they had nothing. They didn't produce a single piece of paper resulting from the hours and hours that Lee Harvey Oswald was questioned by the Dallas police.
But didn't you actually, in your book, you commented that actually people had been sent from the federal government to prevent an investigation, a homicide investigation?
That's correct. A lawyer named Herbert J. Miller, Jr. was sent from Washington to Dallas, because the Dallas law enforcement, I think the Attorney General, they were all set to do at least a commission of inquiry. After all, at the time, I think people probably forget this, at the time, murdering the President of the United States was not a federal crime. It was a crime. It was a homicide like any other murder, and the jurisdiction was Texas. So, of course, the federal government violated that immediately by removing the body of President Kennedy and taking it to Bethesda instead of leaving it in the jurisdiction. But then the Texas people still wanted to investigate, and so Miller is sent from Washington to forbid them to do any investigation.
To forbid
and they
them?
Obeyed.
I think that's so important, that they forbade them. Where does the federal government get around ordering a local jurisdiction not to investigate the murder of the President of the United States? But, you see, these people have the power, and if you defy them, they'll come after you, and you might end up like those other 100 people. And if you read the stories, how many people died, in fact, one of the major people involved in this was a fellow named David Ferry, and didn't he die under rather strange circumstances?
That's right, Stan. David Ferry was a pilot, a CIA contract pilot who did a lot of missions into Cuba, burning sugarcane fields, infiltrating people, exfiltrating people. And during the weekend of the assassination, Jim Garrison discovered that Lee Harvey Oswald and David Ferry were very close. So Garrison called Ferry in and questioned him right then in the weekend of November of 1963. Garrison then turned Ferry over to the FBI and the Secret Service, and they let him go. He was never questioned by the Warren Commission. Now, in 1966, when Garrison begins to investigate again, of course, David Ferry is his chief suspect. And about a month after Garrison has begun, and David Ferry has already begun talking, and he has revealed that he was in fact working for the CIA, that of course he knew Clay Shaw, that of course Clay Shaw was Clay Bertrand, and that Clay Shaw was a Central Intelligence Agency operative, David Ferry is found dead. Now, he has typed suicide notes there. And the coroner in New Orleans, who had a reputation for ruling natural causes in very strange incidents. The mayor of New Orleans, one of the mayors, Chet Morrison's wife, died, and that was also ruled natural causes. And various other cases that were very suspicious were ruled natural causes. How David Ferry died, we don't know to this day. But he certainly died conveniently. Garrison was about to arrest him the following week.
All right, and so, but the interesting thing that you bring out is that there's a great deal of evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for the FBI. He worked for the CIA. He worked for, what, the customs agencies? He was a government agent, not for one agency, but for a number of agencies. Why has that never been brought up?
Well, I think that actually it has. It's just that the mainstream media, New York Times is the chief culprit because they are the newspaper of record, ignore the evidence and don't print it. And if the mainstream media, if the television stations, if the New York Times and the Washington Post don't print these facts, it's as if they don't exist. What started Jim Garrison on his investigation was, in fact, that he was in Washington, D.C., and he was visiting, guess who, Hale Boggs, Louisiana representative, and Hale Boggs was told by Alan Dulles during the sessions of the Warren Commission, keep quiet, don't say anything, but we have evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald was working for the FBI. So what Hale Boggs does is to tell Garrison, and of course this immediately reawakened Garrison's interest in investigating the Kennedy assassination. Now for all his life, Garrison never blew Hale Boggs' cover. Garrison used to say that Russell Long, said the senator, was actually the person who turned him on to the assassination and made him reinvestigate. That isn't true at all. It was Hale Boggs who told him about Oswald being with the FBI during the closed sessions of the Warren Commission. Now, those closed sessions where Oswald's FBI status is discussed are now public. Well, they have been published for many years. It's just that people ignore them. Now I found out something else along the same line. It's interesting, and that is I went last June. I did my final interview, which was with a Cuban who worked very closely with Bobby Kennedy. His name was Angelo Mercado, and he was part of Bobby Kennedy's group. And he's told me that Bobby sent him to New Orleans because they knew, quote, something was cooking in New Orleans. And as soon as he got to New Orleans, the first person he sees, or one among the first, whom he begins to surveil is Lee Harvey Oswald. And quickly, Bobby Kennedy's people, and therefore Bobby Kennedy knew that Lee Harvey Oswald was working for the FBI. And Bobby Kennedy reasoned, well, if he's working for the FBI, if the FBI has him under control, he's no threat. So Bobby Kennedy underestimated the enemies of himself and his brother, of course. But there was not everybody. It's an open secret that Oswald was working for the FBI and was part of the CIA secret defector program into the Soviet Union. And the records of the Church Committee reveal as well that Oswald was also with Customs, which was common in those days, that the CIA and U.S. Customs exchanged agents.
And I think what the significant thing was that Oswald had worked with U-2 planes that had been stationed in Japan, and Oswald was sent over with disinformation for the Soviets, at least that's the theory. And of course, shortly after he was there, then of course Gary Power's plane, you remember that was a U-2 plane, got shot down, and some people believe there was a definite relationship. Did you get into that at all?
I did get into that. In fact, my editor is his name is Rick Russell at Potomac Books, and he is a military historian and naval historian. He was very interested in the U-2 incident, so I did extra research on the U-2. And what I discovered is that there was a traitor in the United States government who had told the Soviets everything about the U-2. His name was Dunlop. It wasn't Oswald. And the Soviets knew perfectly well how to disable a U-2. And so Francis Gary Powers walked into a trap. Now, it's true that Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union at the time and even attended a trial in Moscow. But he was there really as a CIA agent. The Soviets, it's pretty clear, I think, from the evidence that the CIA sabotaged that U-2 flight of Francis Gary Powers to sabotage President Eisenhower's attempt to create détente at the summit that would have capped his presidency. He was about to go to Paris to meet with Khrushchev and Charles de Gaulle and Macmillan from in England, and they were meeting in Paris. And of course, after the U-2 incident, it wasn't possible to create that rapprochement that Eisenhower wanted. President Eisenhower was a peace president. He was really, his policies, when we look at them, were very similar to President Kennedy's. Both wanted not to have a deficit, and President Eisenhower said, in fact, that the definition of national security is not having a deficit. Very different from the country that we find ourselves in today.
Yes, it really is. Well, you know, there's just so many significant things. And then, of course, when Oswald comes back, now here's a man supposedly defected to Russia because he hated America, wanted to renounce his citizenship, and yet the State Department pays his way back. And not only that, but allows him to bring back his wife, who is a niece of a high official in the KGB, a colonel of the KGB. Why would the State Department bring back a traitor?
Well, it's very interesting. I think you're absolutely right. And, of course, we know, I think it's just pretty much certain that Oswald was working under counterintelligence of the CIA, and in particular James Angleton. And the CIA counterintelligence, working with the clandestine services, Richard Helms and other people like David Atlee Phillips, really had something to do with the assassination of President Kennedy. I don't think there's any question. The evidence is really overwhelming. Other components of the CIA did not know about it, in particular the Soviet Realities Section. And you think they would know. If Oswald were really a defector into the Soviet Union, the Soviet Realities people would have known it. But in fact, the Soviet people were puzzled. These are CIA officials, and they said, how come he wasn't debriefed? Well, the reason he wasn't debriefed, they wanted to use him, in fact. They thought maybe he'd be good as an agent. They didn't know he was already an agent and that he was working for counterintelligence.
Well, of course, most Americans, in the book after book after book after book after book, I think written, many of them financed by the Central Intelligence Agency or the other intelligence agencies, because we have 14 intelligence agencies in this country. You know, and there's so many books out there. It was all the lone gunman. The magic bullet really did go through President Kennedy and John Connally and shatter in Connally's right wrist and then shatter in his left thigh and then reconstitute itself and appear in pristine condition, you know, on the gurney there in the Parkland Hospital, the gurney that Governor Connally was lying on. That's just why it's the magic bullet. And you know, it's amazing how many people can actually believe that. Somebody once said, doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough, everyone or most people will believe. We're going to be back in just a moment with Joan Mellon. Fascinating book, A Farewell to Justice, a good read, a lot of important information that you're not going to see elsewhere. No question, Lee Harvey Oswald was working for the government. And he paid with his life.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joan Mellon, and her book, A Farewell to Justice, a fascinating book. And it's just page after page of information you're not going to find elsewhere. There is no question. You actually found a good deal of documentation pointing to the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't work for not one, but several of our government agencies. But how about Jack Ruby now? We're told Jack Ruby just walked in off the street. He was so upset. He didn't want Jackie Kennedy to have to go through a trial for Lee Harvey Oswald. That's why he shot him. I remember one story that he had seen a billboard put up by the John Birch Society saying, impeach or Warren. So immediately he decided he was going to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. What did you find out about the connections of Jack Ruby, and why would anybody in their right mind walk into a police station and murder the man who just murdered the American president?
Well, Jim Garrison, Stan, liked to say that Jack Ruby was a member of the mafia branch of the CIA. It's pretty clear that Ruby was hired to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. One of the things I do in my book is to have many incidents. I have many incidents of which show that Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby knew each other very well, from a variety of witnesses, from a stripper at the Carousel Club, from the person who swept up at the Carousel Club, from a cab driver in Dallas, from people in Louisiana, north of Baton Rouge, and also from my main witness, a person who came forward to me fully for the first time. He didn't speak to me first, but he really revealed as much as he knew finally to me. And he told me that when the assassination occurred, he said to himself, how could Jack do that to Lee? Because not only did he know both of them, but he knew that they knew each other. So and again, this is material that is available to any journalist, any writer, any historian, if you're willing to look for it, and if you're not afraid to write it. It's just that we have the courage. We have to, and I think that it's really the whole freedom of the press is at stake. If we don't have the courage to print what we know, we're going to lose our ability to write it all.
Well, of course, Dorothy Kilgallen was going to get to the bottom of it, too, and we all remember what happened to Dorothy.
That's right, and it also had to do with Jack Ruby and Jack Ruby talking to Dorothy Kilgallen.
Oh, and I didn't know Ruby actually talked to Dorothy.
I don't know if he did yet, and I must say I don't remember because it wasn't part of my story, but either he had or perhaps she was about to talk to him. But Jack Ruby was dying to talk, and he even asked Earl Warren, please take me to Washington. This is, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. Other people have written about this. And Earl Warren said, no, we don't have the funds. I think he said, we don't have the resources. Why can't you talk to us here? And Jack Ruby was terrified. He wanted to go to Washington.
And, of course, very shortly after that, he developed a fulminant cancer, and within a few days, he was dead.
That's it.
And, actually, I've seen that. I'm sure you've seen that film clipping there at the there in Dallas, Texas. They have some sort of a center for information on the assassination of President Kennedy. They actually have the video there, or film footage, of Jack Ruby talking to the members of the commission saying, get me out of Dallas and I'll tell you the truth, what really happened.
That's right.
And very shortly after that, he developed the most acute cancer I've ever heard of and just wiped him right out. Now, and I think the point you made, that the CIA had always worked with the mafia and the mafia had always worked with the CIA, but they can't tell the American people that.
Well, you know, the Inspector General's report of, I think, April 1967, which describes Operation Mongoose, and that is the CIA and the mafia working together to murder Fidel Castro, that's well known. And so if we just carry it over, and I think that's really what happened, that these plots to murder Fidel Castro blew back, and the same people really were used to murder President Kennedy. And this was one of the things that so anguished Bobby Kennedy, because he was very involved himself in these plots to murder Fidel Castro, to do away with Fidel Castro. And suddenly, among the first things that Bobby Kennedy said after the assassination of his brother was he asked his aide, Frank Mankiewicz, and Mankiewicz told me this, were any of our people involved? And Mankiewicz said to me that he thought to himself, did you think there might be? And of course, he did think that there was, that there might be.
All right. Well, of course, Bobby Kennedy was, I think, paid for his naivety with his own life.
That's right.
And there's no question at all. When Saran Saran was standing in front of Bobby Kennedy and the shots came from behind, you have to sort of ask yourself, maybe there's more to this story than we've been told.
And another person who was paid for telling the truth was Dr. Thomas Noguchi in Los Angeles County, who did the autopsy on Robert Kennedy and, you know, took a lot of abuse, and I think even was no longer coroner after a while because he told the truth about how Bobby Kennedy died.
Yeah, so there's so much more to the story, ladies and gentlemen. And if what Joan has written is true, and I believe it is all true, I mean, it's an amazing book with well-documented. Why, of course, no man's life or property or family are safe. And this is why I think this is such an important book, in which I hope that many of you will want to get it and want to read it, and, of course, help us to get the truth out. Because if they could kill an American president, and they had the degree of control over the media, and the CIA and the FBI to get away with it, what really happened on September 11th?
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Do Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 on the way down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Joan Mellon, and of course the book really deals with Jim Garrison. And Jim Garrison was a fascinating guy. He was a great big hulk of a man. Certainly we might disagree with some of his morality. He was a womanizer, but he was also really fascinated with the story of the murder of an American president, and he knew nobody else in the world was going to investigate it. And because he was a district attorney and he could subpoena people and he could begin to put together a case, and he felt that much of the assassination plot was planned there in New Orleans, because that's where Lee Harvey Oswald was staying, or had been there a good deal of the time, and it was obvious that there was a CIA operation in that area and Lee Harvey Oswald was associated with it. Why, Jim Garrison then undertook the investigation on his own. And in some ways, that was a fatal mistake because it destroyed him, didn't it?
Well, I don't know. I think Jim Garrison said at one point he didn't really like politics. He could have been governor of Louisiana, could have remained district attorney. He said, well, what should I do, kiss babies? And when David Ferry died, many of the people on Garrison's staff said, okay, this ball is rolling down the hill, because one of the great things about people in Louisiana is the colorful use of language. This ball is rolled down the hill. Let's go back to politics. And Garrison says, are you crazy? I've just begun. And it's true that he was obsessed with finding out what happened to the president, whom he liked to call Jack. And but of course he paid a terrible price, because the FBI harassed him from start to finish. The CIA harassed him. The CIA investigated the jurors on the trial when Jack Garrison finally brought Clay Shaw, the managing director of the International Trademark, into court for participation in the conspiracy to murder President Kennedy. Garrison, though, was very strong. I have to add that even when he lost the Shaw case, because Shaw went on the stand and just lied and lied. He said he didn't know David Ferry. He said he didn't know Lee Harvey Oswald. Where the proof that they knew each other was overwhelming. And he lied, and he got away with it. Well, after Clay Shaw was acquitted, Garrison just went into his office and said, Clarence Darrow lost the Scopes case. Who knows it? In other words, who remembers that? When you think of Clarence Darrow, you think that he won the case that allowed the Darwin theory of evolution to be taught. In fact, he lost that case. Garrison just started up again. And it was clear that he was going to continue his investigation. Finally, what the federal government did was they threatened Garrison's former chief investigator, Pershing Gervais, and they said that he'd go to jail for 8 years for tax evasion unless he really helped them frame Jim Garrison for taking bribes from pinball interests in New Orleans.
But of course, he didn't take bribes, did he?
No, he did not take the bribes.
We might disagree with him on some things, but apparently he was pretty honest as far as his dealing with things. He tried to do what he thought was right.
He didn't care about money, and in fact, the coroner, who's very well known now for doing the autopsies of the victims of Hurricane Katrina, he told me that, this is Frank Minyard, Dr. Minyard said when he would open Garrison's desk drawer, there'd be all the checks from the National Guard, his salary, that he never even bothered to cash. He didn't care about money at all. So this pinball frame-up, actually, Pershing Gervais recanted and admitted to a local journalist there that he really had been blackmailed by the federal government into lying about Jim Garrison.
And you see, this is what it was so disturbing, Joan, is that there are people in government that will use perjured testimony to send innocent people to jail, and there are a lot of them in prison that have been sent there by the federal government, innocent people that they've convicted. And nobody is ever held responsible, and no federal official ever goes to jail for framing innocent people.
Well, what happened, I think that there's a parallel between the attempt to sabotage Jim Garrison's investigation by a Department of Justice operative named Walter Sheridan, who was working for Bobby Kennedy. Sheridan had used bribery, blackmail, wiretapping to convict Jimmy Hoffa. And then he went on and did the same things to Jim Garrison. And I have to say, at a recent conference in Bethesda, a so-called assassination historian got up and said, I wasn't fair to Walter Sheridan. And one wonders, who are these people? Because Sheridan was notorious. And in fact, when Hoffa's conviction came up before the United States Supreme Court, Earl Warren dissented and wanted to throw out the conviction on the ground that because of the illegal methods that were used by the government in convicting him. And then the same thing was done to Jim Garrison.
No, did they actually convict Garrison?
They did not convict Garrison, because Garrison had too much support in the local community, and Garrison did something interesting. He represented himself, and so he was able to give the closing statement, and the jury was just overwhelmed. And he got up and he said, listen, the first last perfect person walked on Earth 2,000 years ago. And I'm not perfect, I'm a flawed man, but I didn't do this. And it turned out at that trial that the person who took the bribes was at Tulane and Broad, which is where the criminal court was located and the district attorney's office was located, but it turned out to be the chief of police and not Jim Garrison. And he was acquitted.
Well, you know, it's a very just discouraging story, and yet there's a story of a man who really wanted to get to the bottom of it, and he paid a terrible price, didn't he, to eventually destroy his marriage. And, you know, although he did actually get reelected there a number of times, because even though they did everything they could to discredit him, and he was attacked all across the country, a lot of people in New Orleans State really stood up for him, didn't they?
They did. In fact, Dr. Minyard told me that the people in Orleans Parish had three photographs in their homes. They had John F. Kennedy, they had Martin Luther King, particularly, of course, the African-American community. They had Martin Luther King and they had Jim Garrison. He was fair all the time. He was for civil liberties. He was against the Klan. He was against censorship. He was, when they tried to censor James Baldwin's book, Another Country, Garrison refused to prosecute. And really, he was a liberal in a place where they didn't even know what liberalism meant.
Well, of course, the difficulty is that this has been covered up, and of course, the government went out to get him and to target him, just as today, the people who are trying to tell you what really happened on 9-1-1, many of these people have been targeted as well. And it is a standard, certainly a technique that's used over and over again. It's like deja vu all over again, and that's why I think your book is so important, because you have to know what happened in the past to understand what's going on today.
Well, I have to tell you, Stan, that a counter book has suddenly appeared at the same time as mine, which revives J. Edgar Hoover's old theory that the Mafia did it, and that the people who planned the assassination were Santos Traficante, Carlos Marcello, who was the Mafia boss of Louisiana and Texas, and Johnny Roselli, who was that mobster whose arms and legs were cut off and he was thrown into a drum and put out to sea. And I find it rather, shall we say, disconcerting that one of these old Mafia done it books should come out at the same time as mine. And we can see the tactic. It's to confuse the issue, to blow smoke, to say, well, some people say this and some people say that, and so we can never know the truth. And I have an enormous amount of evidence, I really think, that cracks the case, that says that, in fact, the CIA's clandestine service was behind the planning, not only the cover-up. In fact, I show that the cover-up began before the crime. And that shows, really, I think, that the same people who planned the crime also covered it up. It's the same group of people.
And, of course, they needed a patsy, and that patsy was Lee Harvey Oswald?
And he was set up in Louisiana. And that's why a lot of my story takes place north of Baton Rouge, in the little towns of Clinton and Jackson, where Oswald is taken to get a job at the mental hospital, the big East Louisiana State Hospital at Jackson. He's taken there by Clay Shaw and Garrison Suspect. And Garrison reasoned, he couldn't figure out, well, what did this mean? I think it meant that Oswald was going to be seen first as an employee, perhaps as a patient soon enough, because he was behaving, even on the day that he went to apply for the job, extremely erratically. And I had a new witness who was the medical director of the hospital, Dr. Frank Silva, who witnessed Oswald acting, screaming and ranting about how he was going to murder Fidel Castro. And so it was clear that he was going to be perhaps seen as a mental patient. Perhaps he would escape and turn up in Dealey Plaza.
But do you think he was playing a part?
Definitely playing a part.
And he was an excellent actor. And, of course, everything to make you think he was a communist, you know, he had defected to Russia. He was passing out flyers for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. This was all to confuse the American people. In fact, what they really wanted you to believe was that the communists were behind this. And then if you figured the communists weren't behind it, it had to be the mafia that was behind it. If you didn't believe that, then it was Fidel Castro who was behind it. All of the rabbit trails are there. Did you have that feeling? You know, they did everything they could to confuse the American
Definitely.
People.
Definitely, and they're still trying to do it to this day. And I think part of that was Oswald's disguise, as you say, Stan, as a pro-Castro person giving out leaflets saying fair play for Cuba on the streets of New Orleans and getting into a fight with three revolutionary Cubans who were anti-Castro and getting arrested. And when Oswald was arrested, and I have this conversation really in my book for the first time, Oswald goes to the First District Police Station and he's talking to Lieutenant Francis Martello, who is interviewing him. And Martello didn't admit to the Warren Commission or to anyone else what Oswald said. And finally it comes out what Oswald said was, please call the FBI, tell them you have Lee Oswald in custody. Well, that shows us, doesn't it, that Oswald is revealing that the FBI knew him well.
And, of course, I think that the most significant thing, the disheartening people to the traditional patriots here, is the part that J. Edgar Hoover played in this whole cover-up.
Well, J. Edgar Hoover really was his determination was to destroy Garrison's investigation. And we have a document. This did somehow get by, and it's in the National Archives. And we have Hoover directing all of his special agents in charge with the following sentence, give Garrison nothing. So when people came forward and gave information, believing that if they gave it to the FBI, they were simultaneously giving it to the district attorney of Orleans Parish, it wasn't so. The FBI never passed any of these leads on to Garrison. And in fact, Hoover adds in the same document, tell Reitmeier, and Reitmeier was the special agent in charge in New Orleans, tell Reitmeier to keep his mouth shut. And we can see the FBI constantly told their own agents in the state of Louisiana not to cooperate with Garrison's investigation. Well, why was that?
Well, I think it's very, very obvious that some of the other information we have that J. Edgar Hoover knew exactly what was going to happen on that morning. And the purpose of the FBI was not to reveal, but to conceal the truth from the American people and conceal the CIA involvement in this whole thing.
Definitely.
All right, fine. Well, now, who do you think that actually were the shooters? Did you really get into that?
I found some individuals who clearly were at Dealey Plaza who said that they weren't. One was a person who was very closely involved with CIA operations in the anti-Castro world, and that was someone named Lawrence Howard. And he was in Dealey Plaza, and we know that because a young man whom I mentioned earlier named Thomas Edward Beckham went to Dallas on the instructions of David Ferry's lawyer, and David Ferry, to give maps, diagrams of Dealey Plaza, and all these materials to Howard, who was waiting for him outside a motel called the Executive Inn in Dallas. Now, Thomas Edward Beckham was interviewed by the House Select Committee investigators, L.J. Delsa and Robert Burris, and they subjected him to a polygraph by the New Orleans Police Department because they really wondered, well, is this man telling the truth? And Beckham passed with flying colors. And L.J. Delsa told me, he said, you know, I can, a longtime homicide detective, former U.S. Marine, and he said, I can always tell. With people who are telling the truth, they hesitate. Sometimes they say they don't know. And then he said something that really was prescient. He said, with liars, it's like water swelling over the levee without control. Of course, which is exactly what we saw there. But that was how he put it. And I think he was, and he still to this day, Delsa is certain, and I am as well, that Thomas Edward Beckham is telling us the truth.
And of course, it's so interesting. I just, about a month ago, I saw something on the History Channel. You know, it was Kennedy and his men, something of that sort, and or the men who killed Kennedy. And of course, the basic purpose of this was to poo-poo the idea there was a conspiracy, and they poo-pooed the House Select Committee, and they didn't know what they were talking about, and they had all these people who said it was the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, anybody who thinks there's a conspiracy, and they're so clever the way they do that. And then they will bring in supposedly both sides, and then they'll discredit the people who are telling the truth. And, of course, they never really bring out the really important aspects. But television is such a powerful media of deceiving the public. Have you run into that, sir?
Definitely. Well, Jim Garrison was very funny on that subject. He said not only was Lee Harvey Oswald never alone, but he was never with anyone who was not with the CIA. And Garrison kept on, and I think to this day, if you watch those shows, The Men Who Killed Kennedy or any of it, you'll always see Garrison being discredited. It's almost as if it's a reflex. And to this day, there are articles being written attacking Garrison. And one has to, Garrison died in 1992. One has to wonder, Garrison must have been right if people feel the need to continually attack him instead of, well, why not just ignore him? He was definitely a threat because he really, I think he discovered what happened.
Well, of course, now that your book is out, have you been considered to come under a little attack in opposition to the information you're trying to get at?
I've been attacked over and over. I've been attacked in the papers. I've been ignored in the papers. I've been, very few people have had the courage to come forward and really even look at my book in an honest way. And I'm just relying on word of mouth, on readers, people spread, you know, reading it and looking at the notes and seeing that the evidence is really very sound and telling other people about it, because I'm sure not going to be reviewed in the New York Times.
You're sure not going to be? Well, I hope you'll come on. We actually do 5 hours of talk radio a day, and I really want to get you onto our other programs, and because I want our listeners out across America to hear what you have, and to get your book and to evaluate it and find out exactly what's going on. How much does the book actually cost?
The book, I think, is you can get it for $19.77 at Amazon.com.
All right.
If you buy it at Barnes & Noble or Borders, I suppose it's $29.95.
All right.
But other bookstores should have it, too. So it's the publisher is Potomac Books, Inc. You can also go on their website, Potomac Books. You need the INC because Potomac Books by itself turns out to be a porno house. So you have to say Potomac Books, Inc. But Amazon.com will send it to you within 24 hours.
Potomac Books, Inc. All right,
Inc.,
fine.
INC.
All right, fine. So anyway, I think it's an important book. I think you've done a great job there. Well, how long has the book been out now?
The book's been out since November 15th, which isn't so long because we've had Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I'm taking what Garrison did, the long view. After the House Select Committee failed and L.J. Delsa had to go to Garrison and say, Judge, I wouldn't give you 2 cents for a federal investigation. They couldn't pay me enough money for me to do another investigation sponsored by the federal government. And Garrison just said, keep on as long as you can. The truth will come out.
And, of course, actually, the House Select Committee actually eventually did come out and say there was a conspiracy because there were 4 shots fired.
That's exactly right, because they weren't going to. Richard Billings, who worked with Blakey, who was the chief counsel, said they really wanted to rubber stamp the Warren Report and say that Oswald did it. And then that Dicta belt from the policeman's motorcycle came in, and it was clear that there were at least four shots fired at Dealey Plaza, which meant Lee Harvey Oswald could not have been the only shooter. And so reluctantly, Robert Blakey had to say that there was a conspiracy. There was just no question about it.
And, of course, the History Channel cover-up on that. Oh, my goodness, the policeman wasn't even close at all to where the shots were fired, and he didn't know what he was talking about, and on and on and on. They cannot let the American people know the truth about that, because then they might ask about what happened to Bobby Kennedy and what happened to Martin Luther King and
Malcolm X, and on and on we go on and on.
And right, and of course now it takes us up to 9/11, and now we're in a war, and a war that's never going to end in the Middle East. Well, we're out of time, Joan. Thank you so very much, and I will be calling you off the air because I really want to get you on all of our other programs. You're a delightful guest.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Stan.
God bless, and bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean real, hard-to-find, all-natural Pure Soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorants, or antibacterials. Probably never, right? Hey, folks, Michael Trudeau here, and I want to tell you about my friend Marty. He's the owner and founder of the Calben Soap Company. For the past 55 years, the Calben Soap Company has been making triple-concentrated Pure Soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now, for the first time, Calben Pure Soap is available factory-direct to you and your family. Calben Pure Soap is made from all natural ingredients. It's earth-friendly and it's safe. Call the Calben Soap Company today toll-free at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Visit them on the web at calbenpuresoap.com or call for information at 1-800-340-7091. That web address again is calbenpuresoap.com. Try Pure Soap once, and I guarantee you'll never use anything else.
You know, when I was growing up, my parents weren't worried about our education. We were taught the basics of math and English, science and history, the joy of art and music, and the need for sports. And our generation turned out leaders in every field. But as a parent today, I am concerned with my child's education. That's why I chose VHM Christian School. I know that at VHM, my children are getting a quality education with a biblical foundation. I'm not worried whether they'll be prepared. I know they are. VHM gives my children the tools to succeed and instills moral values. There are so many issues for me to be concerned about. I'm glad my children's education is not one of them. Won't you call VHM today? Your child is worth it. Call 475-4762. That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is really a fascinating book by Joan, and we haven't decided whether we're going to carry it or not. Anyway, we see if we can get it, and if you're interested, let us know, and we'll call you back, let you know what it'll cost. But we have two wonderful four-tape sets on the Kennedy assassination, an interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the Pentagon liaison to the CIA. And, of course, Fletcher Prouty was immortalized in Oliver Stone's film JFK as the colonel who's sitting on the park bench with Jim Garrison saying, "You've got to follow this through. There was a conspiracy to kill." the President of the United States. We've got two great four-tape sets. You'll like to hear my interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown, who was attended the dinner party, and the meeting was held immediately after the night before, and she will tell you who was there plotting for the murder of an American president, including, of course, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and Madeleine Duncan Brown was his mistress. We have her book, Texas in the Morning. We carry a couple of great books. One is Kill Zone by Craig Roberts. Another is Double Cross, written by the brother of the head of the CIA, of the mafia at that time. His name was Chuck Giancano. Sam Giancano was the head of the mafia. And if you really want to know why why Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, you need to get the book. It's fascinating. And you find out that the mafia was doing all of the assassinations, or many of the assassinations, for the CIA with your tax money. And, of course, the CIA was then allowing the mafia to run drugs. The CIA was bringing them in for the mafia. They worked very closely together. You have to understand the degree of evil that exists today. And we do hope that many of you will call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a Kennedy special where you can get, books and tape sets. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Kennedy special, or you can get the individual tape sets. That book, Double Cross, rather inexpensive, written by the brother of the head of the mafia. His name is Chuck Giancano. Sam Giancano, of course, was the head of the mafia, and he was having an affair with Marilyn Monroe, as was, with a woman named Judith Exner, as was John Kennedy. So they were both sleeping with the same woman. It's amazing information, but we never talk about this today. You must understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of America. If you have not yet gone to our website at RadioLiberty.com and got pulled out our newsletters, please do that. If you'd like to get a free newsletter, perhaps you'd like to understand why electricity and natural gas and gasoline are going up, you'll certainly want to get our newsletter, Peak Oil, too. If you want to understand what's going on in Iraq, you'll want to get our latest newsletter, Deja Vu in Iraq. If you have not been in touch with us before, we'll be glad to send you one of the newsletters free, either one of those. If you call us at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, if you go to our website, you can see all of the various books we have and the tape sets and the videos. And we do hope many of you will want to get my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll want to get my video, Iraq, The Untold Story, because you need to understand the real reason we're in Iraq. You are never being told. And if you think the war is going to end, why, you're sadly mistaken. The plan is for it to go on and on and on. And if you really, of course, would like to get to the background of that, as I say, the video, Iraq, The Untold Story, the syllabus that goes with that, but the three pamphlets we put together, Foreknowledge 911, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, all three of them together, only $9.95. You need to get it, you need to read it, you need to study it. You need to know what the top-level CIA agent told, off the record, of course, a reporter about how when the dust finally settles, the American people will find 911 wasn't a failure for intelligence, it was a triumph. You can get the reference for it, it's all there in our material. So please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.